Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. All right, folks, welcome back. And it is now or never. And fortunately, we've got Paul Venable back with us. And unfortunately, and I think everybody can attest to this, even when you're having a conversation and, you know, while you're talking, you can lose track of some of the thoughts that you wanted to say. Because, I mean, who is not guilty of, you know, there was something I was going to say and I forgot. And so I can only expect that since it was yesterday that we talked about the corporations and it ended up, because that's still dangling out there. We still have to, you know, dispose of this issue of corporations and why it was brought up and so forth. But more importantly, placing corporations into context based on our Constitution, not based on how we have allowed ourselves to get outside of the framework of the Constitution. When I say we, I mean the men that were living way back then who didn't see the danger of what they were doing by violating the Constitution. So, Paul, welcome back. And if you help me out here if I'm starting this whole thing off. So I think the first thing that you just to kind of fully dispatch or, you know, to deal with and put this to rest. Why was this even brought up? And so is that not correct?
Well, yeah. And kind of the question I had in the back of my mind is, and especially for the audience, you know, where did this question come from? We're not talking about necessarily a corporation like, you know, a car manufacturer or a clothing store, but somehow they understood this involvement, a corporation involved in government. And that's what I think we ought to clarify for the audience. What's meant here and what are they trying to convey?
Yeah, okay. So first off, why did this even – this was a ancillary issue because the real issue that they were debating was the clause in Article 1 that allowed the federal government to basically, you know, appoint the time, place, and et cetera if the state legislatures didn't do so. So, you know, this individual, Judge Dana, was basically kind of going through, you know, his point was he was against this completely. And then as he's listened to this debate, he's now fully in favor of this clause and this line. Because he admitted, and this is the whole point, he saw that in Rhode Island was going down this path of creating corporations. In other words, instead of having a Republican form of government, Rhode Island was going down the path of Britain under the monarchy of creating corporations. See, you know, you can put these slides or you can... You know, there's room because most people think, you know, that we're a federation when we're not. We're really we're more of a confederation than we are a federation. You know, so when we look at how we implement things in our government, it's not necessarily a black and white democracy or black and white Republican form of government. Where, you know, if it was a Republican form of government, that doesn't deal with the sovereignty of the nation, sovereignty of the states, and sovereignty of the county. So you have to kind of recognize the body whole. And I do get into this in the article that I've not published of how to look at the different planes that exist within government. You know, horizontal plane, vertical plane, and some of these sideways planes. But bottom line, when they... You know, we're looking at what this government was going to form. They didn't even realize that, you know, because they haven't even gotten the Article 4 yet, that it actually guaranteed to each state in the union, the people of those states in the union, that the state would have a Republican form of government, which means that means you can't have a corporate form of government. And it's not some twist when they were talking about the state shall have a Republican form of government. they were talking very specifically that, you know, it would be a representation of the sovereigns, and they are the ones that would have suffrage. When we look at a corporation, when we look at who is actually in control of that, you know, the appointments of these people, then we now actually have, because we've gone completely away from a Republican form of government, and this is why I argue to people, we have a monarchical party, democratic socialistic government that, you know, that rides in this world of corporations. And so, I mean, it is a very twisted and perverted and confusing government that we have today, but it doesn't resemble the constitutional Republican form of government that was established, that has never been amended to change that government. So in other words, the power has never been granted to change our form of government, and yet it has been changed because the parties have done it. And it always comes down to, this is what we were saying, we have to hold them accountable to the law. If we're not, then they're going to continually run ruckshaw over us, and, you know, and we will be, you know, beaten, battered, and dragged along, because that's what's happening. We're being dragged along with a system that is not representative, legally representative. It's an illegitimate system dragging us. And all we've got to do, we have all the power, and we have far more power than we realize, because if we stand, we stop that handcart. We stop that vehicle that's taking us over the cliff. All we have to do is take a stand. But, and I don't know if I'm answering the question, but to be very clear, what they were doing in Rhode Island, because they were talking about how they were doing this in England as well. This idea of corporations and moving America into a corporate form of government, that happened under, in 1871, what was that act that they passed? It was the...
I think it may have been the Corporation Act.
Nah, it wasn't the Corporation. It was something else. It was tied to something else, though. But you're right. It laid the groundwork to allow the government unconstitutionally to start forming corporations when there was no amendment to eat. The federal government has no ability to interact with a corporation. Mm-hmm. In other words, they have no power to regulate corporations, businesses, or anything. Their power delegated is on the Commerce Clause, is to regulate commerce among the states. Among the states, not among the corporations throughout the world and so forth.
Correct.
So when a corporation is formed, and let me just finish this. When a corporation is formed underneath the state, and it's operating, and it starts, you know, it directly starts sending its goods overseas or importing things, you know, for it to manufacture, that is a state. The state has the responsibility, not the corporation, in dealing with the federal government.
The state has the responsibility.
Yes.
For dealing with the federal
government. So all exportations out of that state, basically the answerable, the responsible body is the state itself. The state, in other words, has to hold its corporations, its businesses, the people that are operating commercially within their state, they're the ones that are supposed to keep them in check.
And accountable to the framework of the Constitution.
Yeah, so which is federal. Let's just run with this real quick. Let's just say you've got a coal company, and that coal company is exporting, you know, out to these different states. Okay, that's great. And let's say the United States, because at one point in time, it actually said, we're not trading with this, you know, this country, because it's a hostile country, hostile to liberty, and we do not want to have any interactions with this country. And so they would basically draw this line that says, no goods, none of these goods will go there. And come to find out, the corporation found, you know, hey, you know, they may have said that we can't do it, but we can actually get a ship to come into this port, pick up the goods, and take it there. And so the corporation is now, you know, doing things that it's not supposed to, but boy, it is making money because it's serving itself. Who's accountable? Is the corporation accountable to the federal government? No. They have no ability to directly deal with corporations. Not in the Constitution. What they have to do is they have to go to the state and tell the state, you've got this corporation that is violating our, you know, our trade position, you know, our policy of not trading with these hostile nations, and they're selling directly to them. And so then, you know, if we have to, we call up the militia, federalize the militia, and go in and execute the laws of the union.
Wow.
But it's a dealing with the state. The states have this responsibility. They are the sovereigns, not the corporations.
And you know what you're saying here? I mean, it's the paradigm is shocking, because what you're saying is that all of these federal regulations that impede the business or supposedly protect the people, if anyone regulates, it should be the states, and the feds don't even have any business being involved in it.
Kind of. The federal government can dictate whether these types of goods can go to these foreign nations or not.
That's correct.
Okay. And so
it's
the state's responsibility to ensure that its businesses are keeping, you know, in line with that policy, because the federal government has that authority.
Correct. But okay. Outside of international relations, you're just what you're saying is pretty much wiping out regulation that's all over the place. I mean, you know, the Code of Federal Regulations is what's involved with these three-letter agencies that have been created unconstitutionally that burden business with all these regulations. And
well, hold up here, just before you go too far. When you say three-letter organizations, what are those?
I'm thinking of agencies like the DEA, the ATF.
Okay, yes.
I'm thinking now, of these unconstitutional agencies that have been created with get this, mm-hmm. With rulemaking power, which they can enforce themselves. You know, they're judge, jury, and executioner, and they can stomp on your rights without going through the process that's defined in the Constitution, or it's defined for a citizen, right?
Well, so they've been granted by an agency that does not have the authority to grant that, the federal government. They've been created and granted these powers, but they don't have the authority to do that. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It is the state's responsibility to actually hold the federal government accountable, to say, hold on here. Mm-hmm. You know, you can hold us accountable on these very specific issues with trade and so forth, but when it comes to what you do, it is our job to keep you in check. Mm-hmm. And you can't do those things. See, when you mentioned three-letter agencies, I always think CIA, NSA, you know, those which are intelligence agencies, which actually do fall under the responsibility of the federal government. Right. However, the states, because they have full oversight, whatever the federal government does, the states should have full oversight of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that they should actually have, you know, all of these caveats, all of these layers of security. The states need to have full access and actually be, you know, they need to have a group of people that are read into. Now, it's not whether these people should be employees. These people should be elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the problems we have with elected officials is they can make, you know, a determination. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, because we've had senators and congressmen, you know, both senators and representatives, actually give away secrets and not actually been spanked or been arrested and held accountable. Well, that should never have happened. And even the president does not have the ability to rewrite his own rules. Mm-hmm. There are rules that you must follow. So Congress creates the rules, but they cannot allow themselves not to be accountable. And the people that should be holding them accountable and executing those rules should be the states, because the states should actually make sure that those rules encompass, you know, all the security, or I should say, the security containment, making sure that the federal government is not, you know, selling us downriver, but also making sure that every player is held accountable if they cross the lines. I mean, there's the states should have gone after Hillary. The states mm-hmm. should have gone after Snowden, because what Snowden did is he violated the Constitution and basically sold us out downriver. What Snowden and anybody should do, they should have to go to the state government and say because the current system, the way it works, it favors my own control. It makes me the god of me. And as Madison says, nobody should be the judge of themselves. You know,
so here's a question.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Here's a question, because we just recently had a leak. Okay. You heard about that one. And in which information was leaked about our presence in Ukraine.
Yep.
And then and so we have Snowden. So here's the question I have. What would be the right way for someone who's seeing something wrong?
So this is what the system is not set up right. The states need to have an office at every state capital. Every state capital should have an office where if you come in and you're carrying classified information, instantly you need to be guarded and protected and made sure that you make it into this SCIF, a sensitive compartmented information facility, that's within the state house or right next to it or what have you, to make sure that you get in there with the information, and then when somebody can come in who is cleared, that is a part of the state legislature, an elected representative, senator, what have you, and or all of those who are available, then, because then they would need to have somebody there all the time. Mm-hmm. In other words, 24/7, or not 24/7, but basically, you know, every working day of the week, so that when you're ready to blow the whistle, you go straight to your state house, you go into that SCIF, and you say, you know, I've got information that the federal government is doing something it shouldn't be doing. And then the state, basically in this SCIF, this state would then instantly, and they have no choice, it would be promulgated to all 50 states. They would all receive the exact same information at the exact same time, so mm-hmm. that everybody in the state houses that have classified clearances now understand we have a security breach, that mm-hmm. the federal government has been doing something that they had no authority to do, and that the states have to step in and interpose and say, you know, these people are gone, and we have to use, you know, we have to start holding people fully accountable. And that's how we actually get behavior to change. When you hold a child accountable for their actions, you actually hold them accountable, they actually change their behavior. But our child government, the federal government, is getting away with murder and doing anything and everything. They're so corrupt that they are not within, they can't even think within the parameters of following the law. They're making it up as they go along.
That's been going on for a long time.
It has been, yes.
Hopefully, that's why we're doing what we're doing.
Right.
So I certainly appreciate that. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So now that we only have 5 minutes left, and we've kind of covered corporations, and we're still in the Massachusetts ratification debates, the next one that I thought was really important that we covered was this bribery and corruption on the 17th of January in the Massachusetts debates. And I think you'll find this kind of interesting, because what this is, and I'll actually read the precursor to this, and I'll let you read what it says. Whereas,
did you say the 17th?
Yes, this is on. It's called Bribery and Corruption is the title in the navigation pane.
Okay.
And what I'll set this up: the Boston Gazette and Country Journal printed printed in their newspaper this huge announcement. And so what I'd like you to do is, underneath the bribery and corruption, this is basically, you know, how this is presented, and they cite what is said in the Boston, the citations there, and then they actually, the governing body of the ratification debates, this is like the only time I'm aware of that they actually had to respond with a resolution. So go ahead. You got it? It's on page, yes. It's on page 38.
Well, there's something he's here preceding this on motion resolved as follows: whereas there is a publication in the Boston Gazette and County Journal of this day as follows,
right,
is bribery and corruption. The most diabolical plan is on foot to corrupt the members of the convention who oppose the adoption of the new constitution. Large sums of money have been brought from a neighboring state for that purpose, contributed by the wealthy. If so, is it not probable there may be collections for the same accursed purpose nearer home? Sentinel. Resolved, that this convention will take measures for inquiring into the subject of the said publication and for ascertaining the truth or falsehood of the suggestion therein contained. Ordered, that the messenger be directed to request the printers of the said Gazette to appear before this convention forthwith to give information respecting the said publication. Afternoon. The messenger informed the convention that he had acquainted the printers of the Boston Gazette, etc., of the order of the forenoon respecting them, and was answered that one of them would attend the convention this afternoon. A letter from Messrs. Benjamin Eads and Son, printers of the Boston Gazette, etc., relative to the publication entered this morning, read and committed to Mr. Parsons, Mr. Nasson, Mr. Gorham, Mr. Widgery, Mr. Porter, Mr. Gore, and Mr. Thomas of Plymouth. Okay, so that's where the highlighting ends.
Yes. Okay. And so what they're exposing is that there was a plan using bribery and corruption to do what? Who are they buying out?
It seemed like some members of the convention. I don't think it specifically says who, but it appears to be the case.
Well, so
right,
it says right there in the very beginning in the Sentinel, who opposed the adoption of this new constitution.
Ah, okay. Correct.
So, in other words, what were they trying to create?
An insurrection?
No.
Okay,
so let me ask you this. Who do you think was behind this? Do you think that this was being exposed by the Federalist, or do you think that this was a subversive plot by the Anti-Federalist?
I wouldn't guess the Federalist would do something like this. I could be wrong, but it sounds like, from what I have read and experienced, I would guess the Anti-Federalists might do this.
Absolutely.
But the Anti-Federalists are the ones who oppose the adoption of the new Constitution.
So this newspaper happened to be a favorable paper for the Anti-Federalist cause. In other words, protecting the cabals of the states. So in other words, this was really a red herring that the Anti-Federalists threw out that forced the convention to actually stop their debates and actually form a resolution to say, we will look into this and we will ensure that nobody is being bribed and being corrupted in doing this. Because all this did in the public mind was go, wow, these people who want this constitution are really, really evil and bad. And, you know, maybe this whole constitution is now suspect, because that's precisely the outcome of any person reading it. Now, we're going into a break, Paul. You can't hear the music. So just hang tight, and we will be right back after this promo. So, folks, we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so what this does, Paul, and folks, I have told you time and time again that the Federalists, the majority of the anti-Federalists, I should say, were really, they weren't trying to do what was best for the states and for the people. They were trying to do everything they could to protect the power and make sure that this union never solidified so that they would be able to have and maintain their own sovereignty, regardless of the outcome. And again, nobody saw, because we're now in 1788, and nobody saw that in 2 years there would be a massive revolution in France where Napoleon would come to power, where Napoleon would basically say, you know, hey, look at this huge debt that the United States owes us. They haven't paid us a penny. We're going to go in there and we're taking over and we're going to subjugate them. Instead of actually going into Russia or anywhere else, there's no doubt in my mind, Napoleon Bonaparte would have came after us for not being honoring our debt and would have probably made a deal with Britain and Spain to say, well, let's just divide North America into three sections. The center section will be French. You know, the other, you know, America, you can have the southern land would probably be America and the northern side would be France because that's where the slavery is. And the French, even though they incorporated slavery in most of their colonies, they still looked at it as a bad thing. So on the moral ground, or I should say in public appearance, but in other words, they were a bunch of hypocrites. But bottom line, the anti-federalists were already compromised, in my opinion, and this really speaks to the character of what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. And we see this actually being exercised all the time of manipulation by, and as we see this in the news. You know, both sides are playing the manipulation bug. It's about misinformation, right?
Right.
And the party that utilizes that is usually a very nefarious party. And the party that uses this the most today is the Democratic Party.
Right.
Because it's all about misinformation, perverting the narrative. And, you know, but the Republicans aren't, you know, they're not choir boys here.
Right.
In other words, you know, we've got bad actors everywhere, but the worst of all are those who are the communists who have the motto, the ends justify the means, because that's really their solid, hardcore position. The ends justify the means. So I thought this was interesting. Any take on it, though? I mean, the fact that this is actually in the ratification base, that they had to stop their proceedings because there was this injection of misinformation.
Oh, they stopped it on the spot. I mean, that was reported that day.
Uh-huh.
Somebody got hold of it, and they stopped on the spot to address this issue.
Right.
Now, it is probably reported later in the – oh, no, it's – it requires secrecy. It's probably reported later because they had Mr. Benjamin Eads and his son show up.
Uh-huh.
And the fifth section being read. Okay, they are referring to it. They don't have the complete information on the article, but they are addressing it.
Right. Okay, so, you know, do you remember covering what the Rufus King talked about before? Because they bring up corporations, and we covered this before, but, just above this bribery corruption, you see this section, the use of corporations?
Just a minute. Yes, I see. In fact, I was going to ask if we were going to do that after we talked about corporations because I saw it there.
So I'm not sure if we covered this or not. So why don't you go ahead and do this? Go ahead and read that.
Okay.
Because it's worth it, I think. Go ahead.
The Honorable Mr. King rose to pursue the inquiry why the place, quote, place and manner, end quote, of holding elections were omitted in the section under debate. It was to be observed, he said, that in the Constitution of Massachusetts and other states, the manner and place of elections were provided for. The manner was by ballot, and the places, towns. For, said he, we happened to settle originally in townships.
Can I get you to stop?
Yes.
So when they talk about the manner, because in Article 2, it also identifies that the state legislature shall have the, and actually I'm going to pull it up. Folks, this is really, really important because many people think that the state legislature has the authority to actually determine the outcome of an election when they actually don't. So Article 2, Section 1, Subsection 2 says, each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislatures may direct. In other words, they have the ability to direct the manner of the selection or the election of the electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in Congress. Now, when they use the words manner, Rufus King actually makes a clarification. What was the manner? The manner was by ballot. It's right there at the end of the third line. You know, that they have the manner and place of elections were provided for. In other words, it's right there in the Constitution. And what is the manner? By ballot. Mm-hmm. So in other words, they don't have the ability to actually direct the manner if it's already in the Constitution. The manner is how we're to choose. This is why, and as a matter of fact, this is interesting and it's worth going through. And you're going to say, well, shoot, I want to find this because I actually, you know, this is important stuff. And I want to be able to see this for myself. And so if you go to the Electoral College, and let me see here, 1792 United States presidential election. This is where they go through the Electoral College. And they identify that in the very first, this is 1792, right? This is after the federal government is formed and the re-election of George Washington. And so they talk about how the electors were actually, or how each state chose their electors in this. And so, let me see here. Right here, the method of choosing electors is towards the very bottom. This is in 1792. In 1789, when they, you know, when they actually voted for, or 1788, when they actually chose their electors, they all went by elections by the people. In other words, they didn't have senators and congressmen, but they were basically divvied up the congressional districts, and each house had two. This is how it was done. Kentucky and Virginia, the state is divided into electoral districts, one elector chosen per district by the voters of that district. And in the previous 1788, that's exactly what they did. And this is what most states did. But the interesting thing is that the states weren't consistent. The next state, each elector chosen by voters statewide. In other words, in Maryland and Pennsylvania, they had a general election where the people chose their electors. Now, what I'm going to point out, folks, is the whole intent behind the electors underneath the Constitution was that we were to vote specifically for our electors in the presidential year. Then the our electors, we're not even supposed to see the president's names. Mm-hmm. We're only listening to our electors who go around and campaign and say, vote for me, I'm going to do this. And so in Massachusetts, this is how they did it. Two congressional districts chose five electors each. The remaining two districts chose three electors, each elector chosen by a majority of vote of the voters in the congressional districts. If an insufficient number of electors were chosen by a majority from the congressional district, the remaining electors would be appointed by the state legislature. So this was the first adoption where they actually started perverting the ability of the state legislatures to actually dictate the outcome. In other words, the legislatures aren't to dictate the outcome of who's going to represent you. We're to choose who's supposed to represent us in the choosing of our president. Mm-hmm. And so they're the ones. So in other words, the whole process of our Republican form of government is that we are to actually choose who we're delegating our suffrage to. Mm-hmm. And even though we may have a state legislature that we delegate suffrage to, but that's for a very specific thing. When it comes to the federal offices, we're to choose our own representative and we're to choose our own elector. And the state legislature has the ability to choose the senators. So it could be equally argued that when it came to electors, the state legislature could always choose two of the electors because that would represent their suffrage in the choosing of the mm-hmm. president. And then the people would choose their own based on the congressional district. Now, there's a couple more states here. New Hampshire, this is how they did it. Each elector chosen by majority vote of the voters statewide. In other words, it was a general election. If insufficient the number of electors are chosen by a majority vote, a runoff is held by the top two vote getters where, you know, then they come down. So in other words, the voters did it all the way through. And in Connecticut, Delaware, Georgia, New Jersey, New York, Carolina, Rhode Island, South Carolina, and Vermont, each elector was appointed by the state legislature.
Okay.
And so
each state legislature got to determine how electors were chosen. That's what's in the Constitution, right?
So the manner, right. The word in, yes, they shall appoint the manner in how the electors would be chosen. Correct. But not the outcome. See, that there's a difference that, you know, they don't tell you who wins. They're basically say you are to choose your elector by ballot. Ballot or by voice, because in some places they may have actually had, you know, in some counties may not have the paper, may not have the resources. So they performed the election by voice. You know, the sheriff would say, okay, at 12 o'clock, you know, be here and we're going to take your vote at 12. And so people would have to travel to the county seat and they would hold the election by voice or by show of hands so that they mm-hmm. could count, you know. That would be the manner, by voice, by show of hands, and or by ballot. That's what we're supposed to be doing. We're actually, but I'm pointing out that already 4 years into it, the state legislature started assuming the outcomes. And I believe that we, the people, have been, you know, basically misled by these representatives, and these representatives in Connecticut, Delaware, Georgia, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Rhode Island, South Carolina, and Vermont. You know, it seems like these were the problematic states anyway. The deep South states, the Carolinas and Georgia, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Delaware. Anyway, when we start creating constitutional counties, we can actually start injecting declarations of what a Republican. This is, goes back to the importance of definitizing the Constitution. When we start definitizing the Constitution at the county level, determining what the Constitution is and actually going through and clarifying what these things mean, because there's going to be nothing better and greater than a common law grand jury to establish these facts.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're using the source documents and I'm giving everybody the evidence of exactly what they're doing here and how it was to be done, we now have evidence that, you know, we have the ability to take away some of these powers that the states were already assuming. You know what I'm saying? They were already assuming that they were to have these powers, and they were taking, you know, these 7-8 states here that took the manor and dictated the outcome. Well, that was tyrannical on their part. But I don't think anybody stepped up or anybody, you know, was the wiser of it. And it wasn't until after the fact of how, you know, this was all being done. So if you start looking at the Electoral College and how it slowly migrated and perverted itself, it was literally more because the state legislators were exercising a power of corruption, and they were corrupted by the parties eventually, which is how they surrendered the Electoral College to the parties.
Wow.
Anyway.
I would not have seen that.
Right. And so the whole point is, and there's a method for why GR brings up these things. And so, you know, I only stopped you. This is the first, you know, portion of this large body that you're going to read about corporations. But I didn't want to not let that go.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, it's very important to point out the manner was by ballot. They didn't get to choose the outcome.
Right.
Where now they've actually dictated that the parties dictate the outcome. In other words, they've secured the outcome to make sure that the party, as long as the party is hedging its bets for the globalists, we'll always have a globalist president.
Sure.
Okay.
Always.
Okay. So I'm sorry. Go back to where you were, because we got about 11 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. So where I was is we read the manner by ballots, and then originally in townships. That's where we ended.
Right.
Okay.
Huh.
But it was different in the southern states. He would mention an instance. In Virginia, there are but 15 or 20 towns and 70 or 80 counties. Therefore, no rule could be adopted to apply to the whole. If it was practicable, he said, it would be necessary to have a district, the fixed place, but this is liable to exceptions, as a district that may now be fully settled may in time be scarcely inhabited, and the backcountry now scarcely inhabited may be fully settled. Suppose this state thrown into 8 districts and a member apportioned to each. If the numbers increase, the representatives and districts will be increased. The matter, therefore, must be left subject to the regulation of the state legislature or the general government. Suppose the state legislature, the circumstances will be the same. It is truly said that our representatives are but a part of the union, that they may be subject to the control of the rest, but our representatives make a ninth part of the whole. And if any authority is vested in Congress, it must be in our favor, but to the subject. In Connecticut, they do not choose by numbers, but by corporations. Hartford, one of their largest towns, sends no more delegates than one of their smallest corporations, each town sending 2, except latterly when a town it was divided. The same rule is about to be adopted in Rhode Island. The inequality of such representation, where every corporation would have an equal right to send an equal number of representatives, was apparent. In the southern states, the inequality is greater. By the Constitution of South Carolina, the city of Charleston has a right to send 30 representatives to the General Assembly, the whole number of which amounts to 200. The back parts of Carolina have increased greatly since the adoption of their constitution and have frequently attempted an alteration of this unequal mode of representation. But the members from Charleston, having the balance so much in their favor, will not consent to an alteration. And we see that the delegates from Carolina in Congress have always been chosen by the delegates of that city. The representatives, therefore, from that state will not be chosen by the people, but will be the representatives of a faction of that state. If the general government cannot control in this case, how are the people secure? The idea of the honorable gentleman from Douglas, said he, transcends my understanding, for the power of control given by this section extends to the manner of election, not the qualifications of the electors. The qualifications are age and residence, and none can be preferable.
Okay, so one of the things, and this is, I think, a good eye-opening view of a Republican form of government, representation, and some of the basic issues of our electors and how we're to be represented. And I believe that as we start looking, and they really, this is the elephant in the room. We do not have equal representation. As a matter of fact, if we really look at the federal constitution, the way it was designed, the federal constitution secured representation by the states, that the state would at least have a minimum of one representative, you know, per 30,000, you know, and if it didn't have 30,000 members or it didn't have that next threshold, 60,000, they couldn't get its second representative. Well, that same rule or that same guide should have been applied in every state to guarantee and ensure and protect the counties. Mm-hmm. Because the counties do have interests, just like a state has interest. And even though Wyoming may be the least populated state in the union, it doesn't mean that it is less significant and doesn't deserve representation.
Correct.
And so if we, so this is all about helping people understand and prepare. GR is not going to live forever. But the fact is, as we discuss these things, we lay these things out and we prove the academic evidence that eventually when we start reforming and rewriting the constitutions of the state, there's no doubt in my mind that the state constitutions will be modeled like the federal if we're smart. And we want to have a limited and defined government, that the governments that will be empowered the most over the people will be the counties. And they will be smartly empowered to only give them the power to do the necessary things that we want them to do. Mm-hmm. We have advanced as a society, and we do have a need for infrastructure. Is that something we want the free market to do, where profiteers can come in and make us vulnerable because it's all about the mighty dollar? Not something that's important as infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And so, and you know, I know lots of people will argue this point, but I believe that if we all sat down and equally measured the risks and benefits of having a good quality public utility for infrastructure, for our road systems and so forth. Now, there's ways to actually, you know, bring in, you know, private industries and so forth, because in some ways it may be cheaper to contract out the linesman or the linesman work or parts of the linesman work.
Well, isn't that where the bid process comes in?
Yes, I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. Sure. But to actually hand over our electrical grid to private companies where they skim billions of dollars to give to these leaders of these businesses. I know Avista, the small little electrical district that we have out in our area, and everybody has their own. The CEO of Avista walks away every year with millions of dollars as a bonus. And it's all the way things work. And this is an insidious thing, because when you kind of look at a infrastructure, the necessary evil of a business, IT is one of those things. IT is a necessary evil, but they incentivize the IT directors. IT is usually never a VP level. You know, in other words, the IT department is there to serve the other operations and the big part of the production of the company. And so IT is usually a ring down, but they have incentives to keep their costs down. So in other words, your IT director is incentivized. He makes extra money if he doesn't spend money on IT.
Right.
Which means that, yeah, it's great. It forces innovation, but it also, he's incentivized for his own personal gain to actually, forgive the expression, screw over people within the company by not giving them, you know, the resources that they could really use that would help them become more productive. That is these types of business models, these types of, you know, governing models, you know, have real problems. And I think when we start exposing these things, we can actually come up with getting, you know, this is where, you know, the best, the cream of the crop will rise to the top and say, because I believe that when we're doing it the way the framers did, we can actually take us to the next level. And there's no doubt in my mind that, those people exist today. It's just that they've been poorly educated and their paradigms are thinking in ways that are so perverse that it's incompatible with this form of government that we have. Now, unfortunately, we have about 2 minutes left and we've kind of gone back and back. And so the next and the last thing that we have is this money debt, which is a large section that we could probably read. And let me just go ahead and start it off with. I'll do the first paragraph, see where we are with that. And this is Mr. Rufus King again. The fact is true. The history of our own country is a melancholy proof of a similar truth. Massachusetts was paid while other states have been delinquent. How was the war carried on with paper money? Requisitions of the states for that money were made. Who paid them? Massachusetts and a few others. A requisition of $29 million were quoted on Massachusetts and was paid. This state has paid in her proportion of the old money. How comes it then that gentlemen have any of this money by them? Because the other states have shamefully neglected to pay their quotas. Do you ask for redress? Are you scoffed at? The next requisition for $11 million, $6 million of them, of which were paid in the facility, or the in the facilities, the rest in silver money for discharging the interest of the national debt. If the legislatures found a difficulty in paying the hard money, why did they not pay the paper? But $1,200,000 have been paid, and six states have not paid a farthing of it. And so he's already pointing out that out of all of the states in the union, there were states that were bad players that were not paying right. any of their debt. And this is important because what ends up happening as the government forms and a very insidious plan comes forward out of Hamilton, and it was called the Assumption Act. So we got less than a half a minute. I know you've probably got lots to say, so why don't you sit down and write some notes for tomorrow, and if you've got anything that you want to bring up, and then we can pick up where we just left off on this money debt with Rufus King in our next sure. episode. And thank you so much for making your time available and helping me with this.
Hey, thanks for doing this, GR. It's a service to our listeners and to the Republic.
Yes. So thank you so much. And folks, as we've stated, you know, there's a lot of things that we need to garner out of these things. And it's just like the scriptures. As we go through these things, you'll find in one particular verse covering lots of little issues. And it's important that we try to touch them as much as we can. I'm GR Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic. And we need your help. God bless. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.